Do you have a dark curiosity? Follow and listen to Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We tell you guys to tune in all the time. We like to tell you we're the pulse of all things Cleveland sports, Ohio State as well. But now we really want you to tune in because we have somebody, a legend in the football world, the college football world, national championship coach at Ohio State, twice at Florida, and now he's one of the best analysts in all of college football. Surprise, surprise, right? Who would have thunk it? Urban Meyer joins us right now on the Fan Hotline to talk about Ohio State and so much more in the world of football. How are you, Coach? Thank you for joining us this morning. And we are live, by the way, 7:22 here on a Thursday.
We want to make sure. Recording it, yes.
Coach, welcome to the show. How are you?
Well, I'm glad you cleared that up, that it's live. And it's great to be with you guys. And I was just back in the land several weeks ago, played at Barrington Golf Course at a Folds of Honor event, and then went down to the Flats at another event for Folds of Honor. And, you know, every time I go back, I realize, you know, I'm so proud to be from Northeast Ohio and how beautiful it is, especially in the summer. You know, winter can bite you a little bit, but summer's fantastic.
Well, we always expect Ohio State coaches to be in Northeast Ohio. We always were kind of competitive with Columbus and Cincinnati in terms of high school football talent, but Northeast Ohio served you well, right, Coach?
I would actually get a little upset sometimes. I remember when I was at Florida and we played Ohio State in 06, and, you know, I'm from Ashtabula, Ohio, and I've been to, someone counted one time, close to 1,000 high schools in my career recruiting, and I had it all, man. I had a great talent, great coaches, great high school, a great family, and I am so blessed to grow up in Northeast Ohio. I still call it home. I wish I could get back more often, but I try to get back at least once a year.
In the new college football way that they do things, with the college football playoff, Coach, is it almost impossible to repeat as national champions where the teams are not as deep as they used to be? Everybody's gunning for Ohio State. Now you have a new quarterback. I mean, this is a very tall order for Julian Say and Ryan Day and the Buckeyes.
Yeah, one time I did a little study because, you know, we had in 09, after we won in 08, we had most everybody back. And then in 14, our 15 team might have been even better as far as talent. And I remember I went to visit the Chicago Cubs. Joe Madden just won the championship in 2016 in Major League Baseball. And we sat in his office, and he was a mess, you know, and I'm sitting there talking to him. And he said, "Do you realize how hard it is to repeat?" And he threw some stats at me, and I don't have those in front of me, but I don't want to say it's impossible, but it's really hard. Everybody's gunning for you. I got a lot of confidence. So the way the Ryan Day and the Buckeyes have recruited, I don't know if I've witnessed that in modern history. The talent, especially what Brian Hartline brings into that receiver room, it's one after the other. So to answer your question, it's a tall task, but I know who I'm pulling for.
Coach Urban Meyer joining us. Of course, Big Noon kickoff, and Ohio State's got a huge game to start out the season, and they have a new quarterback. Julian Sayin is going to be the signal caller. What have you heard? What have you seen when it comes to him? Obviously committed to Alabama. When Nick Saban leaves the program, he decides to leave, and he comes to Ohio State. Is that a guy that can help Ohio State defend the national championship?
Yeah, the quarterback's best friend is the offensive line, and I'm hearing, you know, we lost four or five starters, but it's the deepest offensive line that they've had in years. And then obviously you got a Purdue transfer, the tight end, you got the best player in college football, and then on the other side you got Ennis and you got Carnell Tate. So Julian Sayin is, from the day he transferred, I started hearing about him. I stood next to him a couple of times. He's not real big, 6 foot, 6 foot one, but they say it's magic when it comes out of his hand. The ball comes out of his hand. He's got great accuracy. He's got great feel for the game, and he also can extend the play, which we know how important that is. So a lot of pressure on him, but the best thing that Julian Sain has is that group of players around him.
Boy, I thought, Coach, one of your strengths through the years at Florida and Ohio State, you knew there'd be attrition in the coaching room, and you saw that with Ryan Day losing coordinators. How difficult is that to be able to continue your message but do it with different coaches? Because people forget this. You're coaching the coaches from time to time.
Yeah, that drove me out of my mind, to be honest with you. We started losing every 2 years. I would lose, and I would mandate our coordinators stay for 2 years, but they all became head coaches. And so I started the co-coordinator routine, you know, where I would have a coordinator and a co-coordinator, and I would anticipate one would leave, and I try to get the next one ready, because at a place, you know, when you're doing well, you feel like you have the systems in place that you want. You don't want to have radical change. You want to keep it going. Now, you do want to improve. You know, when I hired Ryan Day, you know, we just had a great run, but I wanted to enhance our throw game, and he did that. But we didn't change. You know, it bothers me when I hear people say, well, it's Brian Hartline's offense or it's Chip Kelly's offense. No, no, no. It's Ohio State's offense. And same thing on defense. That's not Matt Patricia's defense. That's the Buckeye defense. And I would always mandate that throughout the, and I know Ryan does the same thing, Coach Day does the same thing, that, you know, it's not some individual changing things. Now, they make it better, that's their job, but you don't need a big transition after you win a national championship.
How did you get guys at Florida, and especially Ohio State with the Michigan game, how did you get guys from all over the country who might be being told by the third uncle and everybody who gets involved in their lives? What was it where you get them to take it personally, and they take everything personally, they end up hating Florida State and hating Miami and hating Michigan? How do you tap into that?
You know, that was something I experienced during the 10-year war with. I grew up in it, and I just was always mesmerized by, you know, I didn't say lack of respect, but certainly hatred. You know, I think that's the fine line that I love about the rivalry. The game is, yes, there's hatred, but deep down there's immense respect. At least there was. I think there still is now. That, you know, I talked about this the other day, that how do you show respect to a team? You work every day to beat that team. You give great respect to the players because you know they're great players, to the coaching staff and the fan base, the school, et cetera. And once again, dislike, you have to capitalize that and underline it, but respect, you have to also respect them. So we would brainwash the players. I don't think there's any other way to say that. We would have constant documentaries flowing through the facility every quarter of the year. For example, in the off season, we always had Wolverine Day and Beat the Team Up North Day. During spring practice, once a week, I would always have a Beat the Team Up North Day in practice, and it just never leaves you. And that's what, you know, you take kids from Texas, California, Florida, and I saw Jeremiah Smith on our podcast, the big triple option the other day, said the first day he walked in, he's wearing a blue shirt, and they made it clear you don't do that around here. And some people think that's funny. It's not. It's a way of life, and it better be.
Urban Meyer joining us right now. The coaching job that Ryan Day did last year, look, I'll be honest, totally hammered him after the Michigan loss. I could not believe they lost that game. And you were there. You saw it. You saw everything that happened right after the game. It was a really rough scene. The coaching job that he did after that, because it's not like you ever had a chance to do that, like lose that type of game. And then, oh, now we have a playoff to get ready for. What kind of job was that, and how amazing for him to be able to turn that into a national championship?
It was amazing. One of the great runs, if not the greatest run. But I actually talked to Coach Day several times after that, and I'm still close with so many people in that building, that their credit also has to go to that group of older players they had. You know, you think back in the day that I never really got to coach a senior. You know, most seniors left for the NFL draft. You're always coaching freshmen, sophomores, and juniors. The difference between a freshman and a sophomore, especially at that age, and a senior, you know, it's a child versus a grown man. You get to coach grown men in that locker room and have men-to-men, man-to-man conversations which they had. I still can't wait to someday when the book comes out about what happened in that meeting, because there is a decision made. And you can say the head coach, which he did a wonderful job, but that head coaches don't make decisions like that. That's a player-led decision. And we all witnessed it. And so the Wolverines had it the year before, a very veteran team. The Buckeyes followed suit last year with a very veteran team. And the one team of the Big Ten now this year that kind of has that is Penn State. So I'm anxious to see. There's a huge difference between coaching a room full of seniors and young players.
I saw you made some headlines discussing the punishment the NCAA handed down for the Wolverines. In the end, obviously, it's not the same old NCAA that you encountered or Jim Tressel encountered. Is this the way it needs to be going forward, or do you think they missed the mark?
Oh, that's I don't know. I think the NCAA, as I made the comment, as a enforcement arm, it's over. They started to lose it years ago when everything became litigated. So you would punish a team, and it started. I remember Tennessee was tampering or something, and the NCAA started to go down that road, and they were going to get sued. And every time they get sued, they lose. So I think college football, in that regard, so much of college football is great. In that regard, there is no legislative, there is no enforcement arm right now. There is really not. And they talk about this new college football commission. I don't think people realize that only has to do with NIL. That has nothing to do with whatever violations that occur. The biggest issue that I had with the Wolverines is the fact when I started, because I was the one guy that kept saying that I don't believe that, you know, I have a hard time believing the media right now because I'm not sure that's true because I've seen the media report wrong things over and over again that about so many people went to other games. You know, a guy dressed up as a coach of another program and watched the signals, and I started reading that. And then the most alarming thing, guys, was when they said that they did not follow rules in the facility. They rebuked, dismissed, and did not even listen to the compliance guys. You know, my understanding is the head coach never even met with the NCAA. He refused to. I don't know how that happens. You know, how do you meet? What do you mean you don't meet with the investigators and you just tell your staff not to meet with them? Those are the things that caught my eye that were like, wait a minute now. You know, how does it? I don't know if that's really ever happened.
Urban Meyer joining us on the show, 3-time national champ, College Football Hall of Famer, Triple Option podcast host with Mark Ingram and Rob Stone joining us right now on the Fan Hotline. As far as regulation goes, do you have a plan? Would you have a plan as far as regulation and NIL?
Yeah, there is set, and you know, I started reading about it when it all came to fruition. I still have no idea how you're going to put the guardrails, or the term you use, regulate it. I think the air is out of the balloon, and I really don't understand how you're going to do that. And the problem I have, college football is great. It's never been better product on the field. The fan support, I don't want to bash college football because it's never been better. It's just I'm so old school about education, about life after football, about preparing these players for the next 40 years of their life so they can be great citizens, husbands and fathers and all the things that I, you know, that's kind of what Ohio State has always stood for. And I'm not saying it doesn't now, but whenever you talk about college football now, it's who has the most donor money. And to me, that's, I don't know. I still, that doesn't sit right with me.
Coach, when we here in Cleveland are talking about quarterbacks, seems to always be on the mind. We have somebody in town that I drew a comparison to Tim Tebow about, and that was because of the fan base they brought with them that transcended football, and that's Shedeur Sanders. And not you know, comparing the way they play, but what they come with. They have a brand. You know, Tim Tebow had a brand. Obviously, you coached Tim Tebow. What are you seeing with Shedeur Sanders? And do you think Shedeur Sanders has what it takes to be a starting NFL quarterback?
I loved watching him. We covered at Big Noon. We covered him. You know, we were there for Deion's, I think, first three games, and he turned around a program that was a train wreck. And you don't do that without Shedeur Sanders. You know, I got to go behind the scenes and watch him, watch his coach, or his father and coach. And, you know, a lot of times we all get uncomfortable with maybe the flash and the posse and the watches, et cetera, et cetera. But I know what I saw. I saw a player that can get out of trouble, lead a team, has really all the skill set to be successful. He took just a god-awful program, and they turned it around. And so I think there's a lot of substance there. The issue that I remember Tim had, and a GM told me this one time, is that if you're a backup quarterback, and whether you bring it on yourself or it's just because Tim tried not to bring it on himself, it just happened. You know, as a backup quarterback, they don't want all the media attention on that one player. You know, all coaches want, you know, team, no distraction. So I'm not there in Cleveland. But if you're asking the question, can he do it? I don't think there's any doubt he can do it. You know, it all depends on what's around him. But if you're talking about a skill set, great leadership, a quality person that I really enjoyed watching, I'm a Shedeur Sanders fan.
You and Jim Harbaugh kind of made it Woody and Bo all over again with the rivalry, the 10-year war. I mean, you mentioned that you grew up in the 10-year war. Woody and Bo would often talk. Do you speak much to Jim Harbaugh now, or would you guys meet? Would you guys ever sit down?
You know, we always got along fine during our time. We didn't spend a lot of time together. I knew his brother and know his father, and so great respect for that family. But no, we don't. I don't think we've ever, I think did a couple of Dick Vitale event here in Florida once. And
I love that. I can say, this is great.
That's great.
Great. Never talk to him. I love it. It's better. It's better that way. That in our minds, Ohio State, I'm an alum. That's better that way. It's just perfect.
Okay. It makes it better.
Hey, Coach, I'm just started watching the Dallas Cowboy documentary, and I'm seeing Jimmy Johnson and how the players are talking about how much they absolutely hated him at times. And then obviously they end up becoming a dynasty. And then what are you going to say? But so much of what I am seeing with Jimmy Johnson, I know to a different extent because it was a generation later. I saw it with you in the way that you coached and walked around, you know, different campuses. You know, there are different styles of leadership. Did you model anything after a coach like Jimmy Johnson and someone who, you know, you got a chance to coach in the NFL? He obviously coached in college in the NFL and did it at the highest levels.
Yeah, well, I grew up in the Woody Hayes, Bo Schembechler world, and that was what I knew. And I also grew up in a military family, and one of my greatest, and I still support our military. I tried to run it like special ops, like Navy SEALs and Army Rangers, and I wanted it to be the elite of the elite. And, you know, I tried to make everything so you had to make a commitment to be there. There's nothing worse to being part of something where there's half-ass commitment. And I just wanted to create an atmosphere where that's non-existent. And if you look back, I never really fired coaches, and I never really, you weren't allowed to kick players off the team. But what I tried to do is create an environment where even in recruiting, you know, we were honest. Say this, you come to this school, you're expected to be the best of the very best. And we're going to hold you to that standard. If that doesn't fit your job description, there's a lot of places that, you know, just it's not that important. Ohio State, you're going to have 110,000 people in that stadium. There's an expectation to win. There's an expectation to win every game you play, beat your rival, be a good person, graduate from school. And we're going to hold you to that. If that doesn't fit who you are, what you want, then save us all a lot of time and go somewhere else. And those are conversations we had nonstop. And I wanted to try to get the team to the point where we used to call it the edge. And the edge is where average stops and the elite begins. Get them to that point where their mind and their body start to say, do I really want to do that? When you do that, you're going to find out what you got. And a lot of times, you're going to have greatness.
He hosts the Triple Option. He's on Fox Big Noon Kickoff. He's with Mark Ingram, Rob Stone. It's head coach Urban Meyer, three-time national champion, College Football Hall of Famer. Coach, thank you very much for the time. You've been gracious.
Cleveland, Ohio. Have a great day.
Thank you. Coach Urban Meyer on the Fan Hotline.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Heart Starts Pounding, Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is a weekly podcast hosted by me, Kaylin Moore. Check out Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And of course, Jeff is right. Scott Petrek is standing by right now on the Fan Hotline. Make sure you read him every day. BrownZone.com with Scott Petrek. Hi, Scott. How are you?
Scott.
I'm good. How are you guys?
Good. You ready for him to announce the starting quarterback for week one or what?
Yes, I am ready for that.
I think we all are. Give us your assessment of what we saw on Saturday in particular, Gabriel.
Yeah, I mean, Dylan Gabriel, right? I mean, he's the only quarterback we're talking about. No offense to Tyler Huntley, but he's not going to be around much longer, I wouldn't think. I thought Gabriel was solid. You know, the negatives first, it's the pick six, which the receivers didn't run proper routes, but, you know, he also could have made a better decision. I don't think he has to try to fit it into that window. Could have scrambled or just thrown it away. And then the fumbled handoff with Pierre Strong Jr. Felt like either miscommunication or Gabriel didn't have the right landmarks and didn't quite reach it to Strong. So those two turnovers are huge. But I thought outside of that, he threw the ball well. He was really good on third down, threw to the outside, threw over the middle. And for me, it was important because I thought Gabriel had struggled through big chunks of training camp. So to see him have success in a game was important because I think it, I don't know if the organization had doubts or not, but I would think they should have. And I think that gives everybody more confidence that, okay, this is a guy they thought they were getting when they took him out of Oregon.
Compared to Sanders, comparable? I thought both guys played well. Scott, I've said I just want to see more, and I think it's unfair for anybody to make these grand comparisons and decisions based on one preseason game. But I thought they both did a nice job.
I did too. You know, I mean, if you were going just on the preseason action, I would give a slight nod to Sanders. You know, he threw two touchdowns, didn't turn it over. You know, both those things are really important, so maybe it's a little bit more than a slight edge. I thought he made more explosive plays in the passing game, but I thought Gabriel was good. And you know, we know that Gabriel had an edge in the organization's eyes when they drafted him and throughout this process. That's why, you know, he got some reps with the ones and why Sanders is always fourth. I think Sanders has been better overall than Gabriel. And that's why, you know, if I were making the decision, I think I'd probably have Sanders ahead on the depth chart, but the way Gabriel played Saturday probably gives the organization enough confidence to say, yeah, Gabriel's still number three on the depth chart.
Do you think they're keeping four quarterbacks and could Pickett end up? I didn't realize it because I was listening to the game. I wanted to make sure I heard it right, that that they were saying that you can just take a player and put him straight on the injured practice squad without having to go through waivers. So that two spots are available there. That to me seems perfect for one of these quarterbacks and one named Pickett in particular. What do you think? Are they keeping four?
Well, you mean they could put Kenny Pickett on the IR?
Yes.
And, like, sit him for four games?
Yes.
Yeah, you could do that. He still has to take a spot. I think he has to take a spot in the 53 for a while, like for a couple of days. But you could do that. I think they keep four. I think they want Pickett to be healthy week one because the reason you keep four is because you don't want a rookie to start or not to start. You don't want a rookie to be your top backup week one. Anything could happen. Joe Flacco could pull a hamstring. Who knows what could happen? He could hit the first play of the game, and then you're going to one of the rookies, presumably Gabriel, and I don't think they want to do that. So I think that's why you keep four is so you have Pickett as that insurance policy, and they like Pickett, and there are things they liked about him, and you know, I think they are frustrated that it didn't get to be more of a quarterback competition because of Pickett's hamstring injury. You know, I think there could have been a challenge there to Joe Flacco, so that's why I think they keep four, because even though Gabriel looked solid Saturday, I don't know if it's enough to say, yeah, he can be, you know, one snap away when you're playing Joe Burrow on the Bengals on September 7th.
Scott, we ran a soundbite from Coach Stefanski, and he said something about the quarterbacks and watching and everything else. And then he dropped and we've been watching these guys since April. And mm-hmm. I thought, okay, does that open the door at all for Kenny Pickett, if he's healthy, to possibly be the starter week one?
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, Jeff. And I had the same thought. But I think the answer is no. Kevin's been saying that all along, and
you know, he's not going to get away from that now. And I do believe it's been a long process. And if they were giving you, if they were explaining why Gabriel's ahead of Sanders on the depth chart, I think that would be part of it, that in meetings he might be better. And in the huddle, he's probably better than Sanders, or at least had been at the beginning. But if Kevin Stefanski were going to name the starter this week, which he said he is, I don't think there's any way he names Kenny Pickett the starter when Kenny Pickett hasn't taken an 11-on-11 snap since July 26th. You know, I think if he really wanted Pickett to be the guy, then you could push back this decision and try to play Pickett Saturday against the Rams and see if he were healthy and capable and how he looked. I just don't feel it's going to go in that direction. I know exactly what you're saying, and yes, maybe that's a loophole there that Kevin's getting to. But I think with Pickett being out for the last, whatever, 3-4 weeks, Joe Flacco has gotten the chance to settle with the starters. I think people are comfortable with him, and I think it just makes sense for Joe Flacco to be the guy to start the season.
Isaiah Bond, now a member of your Cleveland Browns. Let me start here. Is he looking at a suspension still or no?
It's interesting. I can't say that he's not. I know that the league can do whatever it wants. So just because somebody doesn't get charged, I mean, we saw that with Deshaun Watson, right? Deshaun Watson didn't get charged, and he winds up getting suspended for a long time. So that doesn't mean they can't suspend him. I do think it's different given that he wasn't in the league when the alleged incident happened and the arrest happened. I think that is a factor in any decision that the league would make. So I don't think it's likely, but I can't say conclusively that he will face no discipline from the league.
Football standpoint, I love the signing. You bring in a guy, he cost you nothing but money, and he has references because he played for Tommy Rees in Alabama, and this team needs some wide receiver depth. Football standpoint, I like it. How quickly do you think he might be able to be up to speed?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can do some stuff with him pretty quickly. You know, maybe gadget things. We've seen the Browns run more end-arounds and jet sweeps than I've ever seen Kevin Stefanski run, whether it's practice or these preseason games. Feels like Isaiah Bond is perfect for that, given his, you know, former track speed, or, you know, his track speed. He's a former track star. So I think you can figure out a way to get him on the field relatively early. You know, it doesn't have to be a full, you know, 60 plays a game, but can you get him out there for 15? I don't think that's crazy. And you know, we've talked so often, guys, about how there are questions at that position and how they lacked depth at that position. And I don't know if they were confident the whole time that they were going to sign Isaiah Bond, but at least it looks like there was some kind of plan in place that, okay, they're going to bring in a guy that might have been drafted in the second or third round and has speed that is a big quality for this receiving core that doesn't have a ton of it. So I think they want him up and ready right away. That might be unrealistic given he's a rookie and all that, but I don't think you're going to have to wait too long to see him on the field in some capacity.
So how many wide receivers do they keep? And with Bond coming in, who just got either knocked back to the bubble, the practice squad, free agent trade, or whatever?
Yeah, I think they keep 5 plus DeAndre Carter, who's your returner.
Right.
I think Caden Davis is the guy that likely loses out on a roster spot. But there's always a chance that it's Deontay Johnson. You know, he was a big question mark coming to camp. We know how last season went for him. The Browns signed him to a minimum contract, no guaranteed money. I think he's been a little up and down in camp. You know, I didn't think he did anything early, and then he came on and you saw him and I go, okay, he's going to, you know, I think he's solidifying himself as a guy that's going to be in this rotation. But I don't know if that's guaranteed. You know, there's behind-the-scenes stuff. They need to know, the team needs to know that his head is in the right spot, that he's gotten back into shape like he needed to do, and he wasn't when I think he arrived for camp. So I think he's a question mark. I think it comes down to Caden Davis or Deontay Johnson. You know, Jerry Jeudy, Cedric Tillman, Jamari Thrash, and Bond, I think, are automatics. And then DeAndre Carter, I think, is because he's a returner. And I don't think they keep 7, especially if you keep 4 quarterbacks, you know, You can't keep a surplus at every spot.
Scott Petrak joining us, Chronicle Telegram, brownzone.com. You can read all of Scott's work right there. DeJuan Jones started the other day. Interesting. Are they sold on him at left tackle, or are they hopeful on him at left tackle? Or is it one and the same?
No, I think it's more hopeful than sold. It was certainly interesting that Jones played Saturday, and it makes sense. You know, Kevin Stefanski explained it yesterday with him and Cedric Tillman, and it was, you know, he just hasn't taken a lot of reps at left tackle ever, let alone in the NFL. You know, he started three games last year at left tackle and then got hurt. So they want to see more of him. He's struggled against Myles Garrett in practice, which is no surprise. But I think if you're DeJuan Jones, you want game reps against people that aren't Myles Garrett and see, okay, can you build some confidence? Can you feel more comfortable as you get closer to week one? I'm sure he'll play Saturday against the Rams, but you know, how long are the starters going to play? You know, does he play a quarter? Does he play a half? You know, does he stay out there a little longer than the rest of the linemen? That could be. But I think they are just trying as much as they can to get him as comfortable and confident as he can be for week one. Now, he's going to be the guy, but I think it's premature to say they're sold that he is the answer at left tackle.
Give me the big picture on defense going into this thing, going into the last preseason game, and just your overall feeling on defense.
Well, I'll give you the concern first is corner. Without Martin Emerson Jr., who's out for the season with that torn Achilles, they got to find that third corner spot. And Cameron Mitchell got the first chance. He struggled a little bit. He's given up plays in practice. We saw him give up a touchdown Saturday. Miles Harden is another option in the nickel. You know, seventh round pick a year ago, undersized, but they like him. They like how hard he plays. They've had some other injuries beyond Emerson. Greg Newsom II hasn't been out there much. So I have concerns about that third cornerback spot. Outside of that, I really like what I've seen. If the practices in Philly seem to confirm what we've seen in Berea, that the defense is playing really well. The defensive front is deep and really difficult to block, whether it's rushing the passer or stopping the run. So we've talked about it. This defense has to be top 10 for the Browns to exceed everybody's expectations. And I know it's only training camp in the preseason, but what I've seen makes me confident that the Browns are going to get back to at least close to where they were in 2023 defensively, and then that gives them a shot to win games. They just need to make sure that they can cover people long enough with that third and fourth corner spots.
All right, last question real quick. I'm just curious your thoughts on the post-game comment from Dillon Gabriel about saying what there's entertainers and then there's competitors, and people thinking that's a shot at Shador.
Yeah, I mean, I could see where people would make that leap. If you don't have any context, you know, Shador Sanders is an entertainer. There's no doubt about it. He's also a competitor. I'm glad that you know, social media dust-up seemed to go away pretty quickly because Gabriel's asked about it and gave, to me, good enough answers to quiet that. You know, I'm still amazed that, you know, a comment can blow up like that in the middle of a game and it becomes a huge thing. Mm-hmm. I don't think he meant Shador Sanders. I think he's way too smart to take a shot like that at a teammate, you know, during the team's broadcast.
Outstanding. Thank you, Scott. Appreciate your time. And of course, we'll talk to you next week. Thanks, man.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Make sure you're reading Scott every day, brownzone.com.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Heart Starts Pounding, Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is a weekly podcast hosted by me, Kaylin Moore. Each week, I'll take you on a dark journey through terrifying true urban legends, bizarre true crime cases, chilling tales of backwoods horror, and more. So if you're looking to join a passionate community of the darkly curious, check out Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, stay curious.
The man is everywhere. I used to do this with everybody who's got a lot of jobs. I mean, he's like football's answer to Seacrest. But I'm definitely using it this time with Mark Schlereth on the Fan Hotline, brought to you by Renegade Fantasy. You can download that from the App Store and Google Play today. And cash prizes are available in Mark's Stinkin' Truth Fantasy Showdown League. Mark Schlereth joining us right now. What's up, buddy?
How are you guys, man? Good to be with you.
We're doing all right here. We're doing a little confused at the direction of the Browns. They seem like they want to win, but they also might not be able to win. What do you think the plan is for the Browns this year?
I have no idea. I can't imagine how many quarterbacks will start a game for the Browns this year. Would you say what is the over under like 2.5 on the number of guys that will start at the QB position this year?
I'll take the easy over there.
Yeah, it's a good line that you're setting. Too. But yeah, I think we'd all take the over.
I think I would take the over too. You might have to put it at 3, right? The over at 3. I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine Flacco, starting forever. I mean, he's 40 years old. I can't imagine that, going through all 17 games there. So you would think at some point you'd see Gabriel. At some point you'd see Shadur, maybe even Kenny Pickett. So I don't know. It's just kind of crazy right now what's going on there. But understand, I mean, I'm a Flacco. I like Flacco. I like him a lot. I think he's a good quarterback, but certainly not the answer moving forward. So just really interesting with all the guys they have.
Yeah, what's odd about Flacco is he does seem like the type of quarterback, just the way his arm is and everything, that he could play till he's 45. And so, like, I almost wonder if Joe knows that this is the final season for him, or at least that he's only going to play 6 or 7 games this year.
Yeah, I think he probably understands where they are as a football team, the division with which they play. I mean, Baltimore certainly seems to be the class of the division. Pittsburgh, we don't know exactly what they're going to be, but they're always competitive. They've got a great defense. And I did a game late in the season, Jets versus Jacksonville. And I got to tell you, Aaron Rodgers was, at the end of the season, he was playing really good football. Now, you're talking about playing for a dysfunctional franchise in the Jets where they don't know how to run the ball. They don't, like, there's a lot of things that were wrong. But he started playing really good. Now you get into Pittsburgh, Arthur Smith, their offensive coordinator, their ability to run the ball, the multiple tight end sets that you know they're going to use. Like, that feels like it could be special there, or could be good at least. I'm not a believer in Cincinnati and what they do and the fact that they don't play defense and they think they've cornered the market on wide receivers and like, that's going to protect Joe Burrow. So I don't necessarily believe in them. But, Flacco's just one of those dudes. You're right. He still has unbelievable arm talent. He's going to play as long as he wants to play. I just don't think he's going to be a starter long term. Because, you're still trying to struggle and figure it out right now in Cleveland.
Mark, Kevin Stefanski going into year 6 this year, which I believe makes him the longest running Browns head coach since Paul Brown. I'm only slightly being facetious there. I will ask you, though, what are your thoughts on Stefanski 6 years into the job here?
Well, what is he won? Coach of the year twice? I mean, he's done an amazing job when you think about the different quarterbacks with Baker Mayfield and everybody else that's played there. And then what you were saddled with, with the quarterback situation you guys were in for a long time. So anyhow, he's done an amazing job. They always run the ball well. They control the line of scrimmage well. It's one thing that I like about Stefanski, or something that I really like about Stefanski, is he always understands that grew up kind of under Kubiak in that West Coast offense, had Zimmer as his head coach when he was coaching in Cleveland. And so understands kind of that old school mentality, the importance of lines of scrimmage and running the ball. So as long as you adhere to that, you realize that that's the way you're going to win. I think you've got a chance to be, you've got a chance to be at least competitive every year.
What'd you make of Shador's preseason so far and what his future outlook could be?
Yeah, it's crazy because I coached, I helped out up at CU spring ball before last season. Mm-hmm. So I helped out up there. And, all the things you hear about Shadur, like, well, he lacks, supreme athletic ability and he lacks arm talent. And, and all the things that scouts, like, put their finger on that don't really matter. It's amazing. We go through all the combine stuff and all the stuff that we evaluate has nothing to do with whether you can play or not. Like, we evaluate 40 times. 40 times tell me you can run fast. Doesn't tell me if you can play.
Yeah.
Bench press test. Show me the top 10 bench pressers that have ever come out of the combine. I'll show you 10 guys who aren't very good. it just blows me away. Like, they're talking, well, he doesn't have elite arm talent. Well, who, like, You throw it 65 yards. How many times do you do that? You throw two Hail Marys in a season? Like, when you ever throw it 65 yards? It's stupid stuff. I'll tell you this. Now, he took too many sacks, and I'll put that on him. I'll put that on him and the system, and he's got to be better. But he's deadly accurate. He's got great touch. And when you watch him in that first preseason game, the thing that I loved, and I mean loved, is his ability to slide and his movement skills in the pocket and still being able to create space, not eyeballing the rush, but feeling the rush and developing and throwing it downfield. And he threw a touchdown that way. I think a couple of touchdowns that way in the pocket. Like those things, I used to say it all the time, and I'm not comparing him to Tom Brady, but I used to say about Tom Brady all the time, was Tom Brady's the best scrambler in football, and he never leaves the pocket. And that's what I want out of my quarterback. And those things, accuracy and his ability to slide and have feel in the pocket, pocket presence, we call it, those things are exceptional with Shedeur Sanders.
Mark Schlereth on the Fan Hotline of the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Of course, Denver radio fame, NFL on Fox as well. He's joining us now talking about the Browns breaking all this down. So it's interesting. I know we just asked you the question about Shedeur, but it's been interesting to see the rookie quarterback wars here for fans and who likes Shedeur but doesn't like Dylan Gabriel. Who just doesn't like Shedeur? And then that means they like Dylan Gabriel. Some people don't like either. You know, when you were looking at both of these quarterbacks coming out, which quarterback did you prefer just as a football player?
Shedeur. And mostly, like, much bigger body. I just, every time I watch Dylan Gabriel play, like, it's hard for me to get over, like, the size. You know, I'm like, I need somebody that's strong, big in the pocket. He just felt like a real, like watching him in Oregon, he just felt small. And, you know, and I don't know what, I mean, they list him at 5'11", 205. I don't know that he's that tall or that big, but that always kind of just scares me a little bit. He does have some touch when he throws the football and all those things. But I was more on the Shedeur kind of bandwagon. But again, I coached up there and I watched him, you know, I watched him practice. Now, like I said, he took too many sacks, but a lot of the stuff, like when I was coaching up there, a lot of the stuff that they did up at CU was like, hey man, it was anti what I grew up understanding about football. You know, like you can't block everybody. And they had a plan where like, hey man, if your guy doesn't come, we're turning protection to the left. Swing back over to the right and pick up the Mike backer and then tell your quarterback you're protected. You're not protected. It's impossible. You can't do that stuff. So, I even pulled Dion aside and said, dude, what you're asking guys to do is impossible. Can't be done. Like, that kind of stuff. So, I don't know how much of his taking sacks was Shedeur just trying to extend plays and you know, having a cavalier attitude about it. And how much of it was this protection that you guys are trying to run sucks. And I saw it. So, you know, there's a little bit of both there that I think is probably somewhere in the middle lies the truth.
All right. One more quarterback to ask you about, because it takes a lot. We got to get through a lot of them. Do you have any idea on whether or not Kenny Pickett can actually be a reclamation project for Kevin Stefanski?
Yeah, at this point, I just don't know. I mean, he's been hurt. What has he had? The hamstring hasn't really played. You know, I'm telling you what, my track record with prayer for tiny hands, it worked for Joe Burrow. I told Joe Burrow, like, hey, Joe, you owe me a debt of gratitude because I prayed for your tiny hands and it worked out. I prayed for Pickett's tiny hands, but it hasn't seemed to work out the same. So, I just don't know. It just feels like with the injury that he's had, and you know the lack of opportunities he's gotten in camp, that he just feels like kind of the forgotten guy in this trio of quarterbacks, so to speak.
I can just see Kenny putting his tiny baby hands together, just just praying himself there. All right, real quick. Obviously, we started this by talking about your work with Renegade Fantasy. What can you tell us about your partnership here and the first fantasy game/app that allows you to substitute in game?
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool. We've been working on it for quite some time, and anyhow, I just have a small partnership in the app, but it's been cool because I've been part of it throughout the whole thing. So it's the first app, like, now, I know there's a lot of you out there that are victims. So if you're one of the victims, then maybe this is not the app for you because you like to blame the guys who don't perform for you on Sunday, and that's the reason you lost the fantasy matchup. But this allows you to be the coach, real-time substitution. So, hey, man, if your back ain't getting it done, you can bench that dude and start your other back right there. Like, bring in the backup and play him. You get somebody that gets injured in the third play of the game, bench him, bring in your backup quarterback, whatever the case may be. So there's an opportunity for in-game substitution, real-time substitution, to make sure that it's all on you. So if you're a responsibility taker, this is the place you want to play fantasy football. You can join my league, the Stink of Truth Fantasy Showdown, if you'd like. And it's going to be fun, man. A lot of cash prizes, a lot of fun stuff going on.
Mark, great stuff as always. You're so much fun. You got great energy. You are a premium ball knower, and we appreciate you.
I appreciate you guys. Take care.
Thank you so much. Mark Schlereth there, the Sting of Truth podcast. Check it out if you haven't already. Denver Radio, NFL on Fox, and the Fan Hotline will react to his thoughts on the Browns situation and the Browns plan in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
That's about the hard work we put in.
It was
over
tough out there in the
tenure.
Sun.
Our next guest.
Watching.
Yep. Our next guest put the hard work in, and one of my favorite guests on the show, by the way. Have I ever told you that, Jeff?
Many times.
Okay. I just want you to know he's a good friend of the show.
One of my favorite partners doing football games.
He is a former Browns linebacker, and we just call him Frank Stams these days. He's on the Fan Hotline. Hi, Frank. How are you?
Hey. Good morning. I'm recovering from a little bit of a cold, so bear with the few coughs and all that, but I'm doing great. You got to learn how to play hurt in this league. I'm doing great, and I'm you guys are the best. Thanks for having me on. I feel the same way about you guys. You guys, you know, I've listened to shows all over the country, and you guys are tops.
And we have one of them.
Yeah, yes, we're one of the shows across. Hey, it's been great having you on today, Frank. We really enjoyed the interview, and you know, you paid us a compliment. So we'll talk to you soon.
I'm kidding.
Hey, listen, I want linebacker to linebacker evaluation here. Carson Schwechter has turned a lot of heads for this team as a rookie, wearing the green dot. I mean, he's calling the plays. I'm just, your assessment of the Browns' second round pick from the eyes of a linebacker.
Well, you know, I think, you know, he doesn't get a stronger endorsement than the head coach and some of the remarks that Kevin Stefanski is making about him, singling him out. You know, wanting him to be a leader, that, you know, and the Browns, I'm not going to say they desperately need leaders, but, you know, they do need some leadership, in the locker room, on the field. And, you know, your signal, that's who you look to as that leadership, you know, the signal caller. So that's the intangible. You know, as far as his physical play, he's got great instincts and a great first step. Defense is all about reaction. And, you know, the quicker you can react to what the offense is doing, the better chance you make in the play. And the kid's smart. You know, he anticipates. He doesn't guess. He anticipates. I'm just assuming that, you know, those are all great qualities in a linebacker. And he's tough. When he gets to the ball, he finishes the play. And, you know, that's, you know, all that is what you want your defense. And this, so far, this defense has been playing like that. That's what you want your defense to be.
Frank, does it look more like a defense that could end up resembling 2 years ago defense when Jim Schwartz had him basically on top of the NFL? Or does this look like a team, the defense that's going to repeat what it did last year, where it was kind of middle of the pack?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I definitely think that defense can, you know, repeat the 2023 season. You know, Jim Schwartz, you know, he's an outstanding coach. You know, he comes from the Belichick tree. When I was up there, Jim was up there, and I love Jim's attitude. You know, he was served under, I should say, more of a Saban disciple than Belichick. You know, it's that toughness. It's that being smart. It's coming to play, being a professional, not making mistakes. being in the right spot. Here's what the Browns are going to have to deal with. And the last year was full of distractions for them. And they let the distractions, in my opinion, just overwhelm them. And then they just, you know, kept spiraling down. They got to gain some momentum early in the schedule, which is a tough one. I looked at those first six games. They've got to gain some momentum there, build some confidence, have the defense keep the score down low so the offense, you know, has a chance to win. And, you know, if they come out of those first three games 3-3, I like their chances to go on and compete. To answer your question, that was the long of it. The short of it, yes, they can become that defense they were in 2023.
All right, your thoughts on the offense and the fact that Joe Flacco was named the Week 1 starter yesterday?
Well, you guys know that. That's no surprise. They brought Flacco back for a reason, and the reason is to give them some stability at that position, which they didn't have last year. They had moments of glory. I mean, that Denver game was something else last year. You got to eliminate the mistakes at quarterback, and there were too many, you know, with the guy handling the ball that much in the game, there were too many. Last year, and I know Flacco, he'll throw some picks, but I think his experience, being the veteran that he is, I think he knows his role, and that is not to lose games for the Browns, and I like the pick and bring some, you know, stability to that position, something that you can count on, move the ball. Paul Brown used to say, you know, football is a game of mistakes. Those that make the fewest usually win. And I think that's the approach with Flacco.
Frank, what do you think of the rookie quarterbacks in the limited amount of time that we've actually been able to see them out on the football field?
Well, I love them. I watched that first one with Shador. And, I came out with his father, Dion. And, Dion's a great guy. I know, you know, a lot of us know him through the press. But I tell you what, when you talk to him, he looks you in the eye. The next day, he remembers your name. He has a conversation with you. He's a sincere guy, and I think he's well-liked among his peers. And his kid, I love the way his kid plays. People are asking me about him, and I said, you know, his kid came out there and he plays fast. He plays with a lot of confidence, and I know we all know where he gets that from. And he was outshining the rest of the field in that game one because of that. I saw the game catch up with him in a little bit in the second half. He took the sack, and you know, there were some incompletions, but if he continues, you know, to get the coaching that he needs and builds that confidence, he can become an NFL quarterback and a good one. And then the left-hander from Oregon, Gabriel, I think is his name.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I liked him yesterday. He showed some poise in the pocket. Threw a nice ball. He anticipated the routes. You know, and then I thought he kept his eyes downfield. When he escaped the pocket a few times, he kept his eyes downfield and he didn't panic and is looking to make a play. So I think the Browns got a couple of good ones. And what's most, I think most important there is the atmosphere of competition, because competition only makes you better. And that group of players is getting better this training camp.
Frank, are you always defined by the round you were picked? Like, you walk into Rams camp and they're the second rounder, right? And what would it take? What does it take for Shador to not be defined as a fifth round pick? Tom Brady was able to do it, but it's not an easy task to do. Are you always defined by the round you were picked in? And if you're drafted a little bit lower, or you're an undrafted free agent, how do you shake that?
So here's what the front office and some of the guys up there, and I'm being kind. I think you're can tell that. And your peer group will define you as what round you're in, you're the guys you came in with. But I tell you what, the rest of that locker room, and I hope the Browns do this, the rest of that locker room is you're just a flipping rookie to everybody else. And, you know, and until you do something, you're buying the donuts and you're the last one off the field. You know, back in the day, we'd have to go get the bags, you know, and I think that locker room, hopefully some of the older guys in that locker room are making those guys earn their stripes. Because, you know, I mean, not everything that happened 30 years ago was a bad thing. But, you know, to answer your question, yeah, you know, I mean, that comes in, you know, you come in with that label, second rounder, third rounder, fifth rounder, you know, whatever. And then that lasts for probably, I don't know, maybe a week or until you show everybody what you got. Because then you either become, you know, I don't want to be too hard. You either become a bust or something that, you know, you're going to be a part of the team going forward.
We have the Frank Stams Bowl coming to town on Saturday. Rams against the Browns. Doesn't get much better than that, Frank.
Right. You know, it's funny is when I was my first year with the Browns, the Rams came to, that was 92, came to, it was either 92 or 93, came to the stadium in the preseason.
Nice. I hope you're there. I hope you have fun. Or I hope you're watching it on TV or listening on the radio.
The Rams have done a good job.
They have.
They've done a good job. That guy's a good coach out there, keeping things together. They play, you know, they play with a lot of excitement. They throw the ball around pretty good.
All right, last point, and you just brought this up. I'm just trying to imagine you as a rookie and Kevin Green hazing you. True or false?
Oh man, you picked a great one there because yeah, it was all about hazing. He got mad because I stole his girlfriend.
I can't imagine why, Frank.
Good move, rookie.
Yeah, he was gone. He was back in I think Alabama or Kentucky in the National Guard, and his girlfriend and I started dating. And boy, was I nervous upon his return.
Yeah, I bet.
But no, my God, I came back to my locker one time, and all the donuts that I bought in the morning for the team were stuffed in my helmet and my pants. I had donuts in my shoes.
Oh, I mean, man.
Yeah, they thought that I went to the day-old donuts. They didn't like the donuts. They thought I went to the day-old donuts to get a discount.
Oh, my God. Frank, I'm going to leave it at that. Thank you. You are a good friend of the show. We appreciate you. Thanks, Frank.
Thanks, Frank.
Right now, let's go to the fan hotline, and we welcome in Odyssey NFL insider Brian Baldinger. He's host of the Best Football Show podcast. Make sure to check out the Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. One of the best things about the Odyssey app, folks, it's absolutely free, and you always take something for free. Brian Baldinger joins us this morning. Brian, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure, guys. Good to be with you. Thanks.
Mason Graham, he's our number 5 overall pick. What do you like about Mason? What don't you like about Mason? Or what do you think he might need improvement on, I should say?
Well, I mean, he's got to learn how to play the NFL game. I mean, he had a good career at Michigan. It's not the NFL. The offenses don't look anything like they do in college, so he's got to get used to the NFL game. The physicalness of it, the beating, the double teams that he's going to get at the point. He doesn't quite see that type of, he doesn't see that size and that power coming at him. So he's got to learn those techniques to take on double teams, you know, and then he's got to develop his pass rush, you know, and how he's going to decipher play action versus run action versus, you know, third down and long and what your plan is. So, you know, he's at the very beginning stages, but there's a lot to work with. The effort is there. I think he's shaped up his body quite a bit from his college days to now. So that's always good. He's young. So, you know, you could do that for the next 5 or 6 years, continue to work on yourself physically. And, man, I think he's got the right attitudes. I think it's a good defensive front. And so he's going to be a part of it. I mean, they're going to start 2 rookies in their defense. in Mason and Carson Schwechinger, and they both look ready for prime time to me.
Brian, how much does, and forgive me, because Myles Garrett should make everybody better, but how much better does Mason Graham look when Myles Garrett is in that lineup week one?
It's hard to say. I mean, it really is. I mean, we've seen just a small sample. I watched them, scrimmaging last week against the Eagles, and, you know, it's hard to really, in that scrimmage, really see the difference. But, you know, Myles is going to draw a lot of attention anywhere he goes, and that's why they move him around. They're going to move him around even more this year. But they're going to move him around so that it's hard to just pinpoint where he's going to be. So, in theory, Mason Graham's going to get a lot of one-on-ones, more than if Myles Garrett wasn't out there on the field. So, it should make things better for everybody out there, you know, whoever it might be, whether it's Alex Wright or, you know, Malik Collins or Shelby Harris, whoever, Isaiah McGuire, whoever's out there. I mean, it should be better. All those guys should be better when Myles is on the field.
You know, we were obviously very terrified of life without JOK, who goes down with the injury last year and then got all his second opinions and has paused his NFL playing career. But then we take an exciting linebacker, and I know it's a lot to ask of somebody, of a rookie, to fill those shoes, of somebody who's good as JOK, but do you think they're on the right track?
I do. He had an amazing season last year in college, and I saw him in training camp, talked to him briefly, not a long time, but he's ready to wear the green dot. He's ready to take charge the way JOK did. He might never come off the field defensively. He might be in part of every one of Jim Schwartz's package. Now, I might be wrong. It's still a long ways away to, you know, you open up with Cincinnati, but it looks like he's going to be on the field in every situation. And he does have really good instincts. In that first game, he played 13 plays. He had 7 tackles. I mean, he knows how to find the football. I think he's built for it. You know, he's probably bigger than JOK. I'm not saying he's better. JOK was an electric player, but he's got his own attributes that you can count on, I think.
Brian Baldinger joining us here. He's the host of the Best Football Show podcast. So have they made the right decision to start Joe Flacco this season?
Well, he's the only healthy guy they have. They had no choice. I mean, I think that in theory they would have liked to at least had some kind of a competition. But, I mean, everybody got hurt. And so there was no competition. But, you know, just watching Joe in practice and watching him in scrimmage against the Eagles, he took the majority of the snaps in practice. And I saw him afterwards. This is his wife. He's got 5 kids. I mean, with the matter, he looks fresh as can be. Now, we haven't started. The hits haven't started piling up. All those kind of things that can happen. But the guy is just a remarkable athlete. I mean, the arm doesn't look any different than when you went out to watch him in 2008 as a rookie with the Ravens. And he can still move well enough. He's not a statue back there. So, I don't know. Like, I even if these guys didn't get hurt, I mean, I think he would have won the job. I mean, I think his experience, his arm, his ability, his ability to see over the top at his size, I mean, those are all things that you're looking for in any quarterback. He just happens to be 40. And it's not a long-term answer, but I think it's the best answer for right now to start the season.
Flacco, Pickett, Gabriel, Sanders, how would your depth chart look if you were the head coach of the Browns?
Well, who's healthy? Who's practicing? I don't know. I mean, honestly, like Dylan Gabriel didn't play badly the other day, the interception. I don't know what Deontay Johnson was doing on the play. But, you know, I mean, it's an interception. It's a pick six. It's not a good play. You don't want it on your resume. But he bounced back. He threw a lot of completions. Pickett, I haven't seen him play in a long time. I kind of know what he can do, but I still haven't seen him play and see what kind of time he has. And Shadur's got an oblique injury. So I don't know how you can form the depth chart with what they have. I don't know if Stu Puntley is on the team or not on the team. He might be the healthiest guy they have. But I know Dylan's healthy right now, so I shouldn't say that. But it's hard to stack it up right now. I mean, Shadur had a nice, really nice opening day, and we haven't seen him really play much since. So, you know, you got to practice. You got to get out there. You got to work on these things. You got to see things. You got to, like, start game planning pretty soon. I'd like to see who's healthy before I see who's number two right now.
If they were both healthy, Sanders, Gabriel, who do you like better?
I think they both have good qualities. I don't know one's better than the other right now. Dylan is
is smaller. You kind of like Shadur size better. The two touchdown throws he made were legit throws. And he trusts his protection. He did great things. I probably would lean a little bit towards Shadur right now. But you'd also like to see a whole lot more than 30 plays, you know, to make that assessment.
Brian Baldinger joined us on a hotline. I think you just kind of stumbled onto it at the end there of the hard part. I think all of this is focused on, which is how do you evaluate when you have two different types of quarterback competitions, one for the starter, one for the backup. I know they said it was a fair competition from day one. I don't really think that Shador or Dylan Gabriel had much of a chance to start week one. Given all of that, like, you were out here, you've talked to the coaches, you've talked to people within the Browns front office. Like, this was a very, very difficult Herculean task, no?
Yeah, I never thought it was going to be fair. And I never thought it would, the way practice is now, there's just not enough quality reps in practice, in scrimmages, or in games. I mean, I do applaud Kevin for going to Philadelphia. They went 2 years ago. And having 2 days of scrimmages, it was good work, really good work. You know, that was crisp, and there was no fights, and there was a lot of reps. It's not games, but it's as close to games as you're going to get. So I think there was a lot of good work, but I mean, Joe took most of the reps. So the idea that you could have any kind of a competition if all four guys were healthy, I mean, ideally, you'd love to see these guys with the number one offensive line.
Brian,
I'd like to see him with the number one offensive line, you know, and so we could really evaluate, you know, throw to Jerry Jeudy on, you know, a Dino route or, you know, a deep post and see if they have timing on the deep throws. But you don't get enough of those opportunities.
Brian Baldinger joining us on the show. The situation with Anthony Richardson, would a team like the Browns be interested in bringing in a guy like that, making a trade for he's already laughing. All right. What would a team be interested in bringing him in like the Browns?
Well, what are the Colts going to do? I mean, if something happens to Daniel Jones right now. I mean, he's still the fourth pick in the draft. I mean, some of these guys, you get – sometimes you get 6, 7, 8, 10 years to prove that you can play. And so, you know, the season hasn't begun yet. There might be opportunities for Anthony to go play again. I don't think they're looking to ship him out. I don't know what their depth chart looks behind, you know, him and Daniel, but – just the fact that, you know, they made Daniel the starter doesn't mean it's over for Anthony Richardson, but I don't think they're looking to trade him right now. I think it'd be foolish. I mean, I think he's still a young guy that still has to grow and develop and learn, and I wouldn't give up on him just yet.
But you were just talking about, Baldy, how few opportunities there are oftentimes in today's day and age. Now, what's funny is you've seen some coaches go back to the old methods and against the current grain, which is, hey, Joe Burrow is going to be out there in all three preseason games because Cincinnati doesn't want to get off to a bad start again, 0-2 for the fourth straight year. You're seeing, you know, Patrick Mahomes always seems to want to be out there. But that's just preseason games, not certainly the same as a regular season game. Like, are we in a weird spot in NFL training camp where nobody truly knows how to nurture these young quarterbacks in the most optimal way?
Well, the only way to get better is to play. And so, you know, how many reps there are in these preseason games, Joe's done really good. There's two or three series in each game he's played against, you know, Philadelphia and then against Washington. He's played really well. You expect that. But honestly, but the other side, you know, like you just can't afford to get any of these guys hurt. You can't legislate against injuries. That's how Joe feels. Even if he's running backwards 20 yards and getting slammed to the ground, he's like, I'm not going to get any better if I'm not playing, if I don't get this timing down. But at the same time, you can't put these guys in bubble wrap and tell them to go play. If you do that, which some teams do, you're basically saying September is the new August, and that's what September is for, to get the timing right, to figure things out, to figure your offense out. That's what happened to the Eagles last year. They were terrible in September last year. But they had the bye week in week five, and then they went on a run. And they figured things out, what the offense is going to be. And that's kind of what teams have to do right now. We're not getting anything done in August. I mean, it's just not enough. They're just exhibitions out there. They don't feel like games to me right now. They're just exhibitions. And you can learn a few things. You can see a guy's speed. You can see effort. You can see some technique. But honestly, they feel more like exhibitions than games.
So can a bye week actually, because it was an early bye, can a bye week actually determine if players play in the preseason?
No, I don't think they're looking at that. I don't think they're weighing in what week your bye week is. Huh. But, I mean, the Eagles haven't played any of their players. I mean, they didn't even play their backup quarterback last week.
Mm-hmm.
They're just saving them. They're just, they think they have a good roster. I mean, everybody's different, and everybody has a different approach. You can say Cincinnati's playing Joe Burrow because they don't want to get off to a bad start, but the defense is dreadful. So, I don't know how they're going to patch that thing up between now and when they play Cleveland. But, I mean, if you want to go get yourself a win, go play some great offense September 7th and go start 1-0 because that defense looks, they don't look like they've improved at all under Al Golden right now.
Baldy, because it's so weird. I hate to feel like I'm interrogating you here. I'm just trying to find the secret to the Browns here, because over the last 6 years, man, they've had some really nice rosters, and the results have been all over the map, all over the map. What does a team have to have, whether it be in the locker room, culturally, whatever, what does the team have to make a coach comfortable with not playing players in the not playing starters in the preseason?
Yeah, well, it's not necessarily about the roster. Washington put their starting offense out there on the field with the offensive rookie of the year. They didn't have any fear about it. Now, it's one series. They went down the field and scored in four plays. But, you know, Dave, I just think that star players win games for you, and teams just don't want to risk losing their star player in a preseason game or scrimmage right now. And that's just where it's at. I mean, what does it take for the Cleveland to turn around? Well, if they had Joe Burrow, it would turn it around. Like, it would give you a fighting chance every week when you have a player of that. But there's one Joe Burrow in this league. They had Baker, and, look, he got hurt, and, things didn't go great. But, he's a great talent, and he's a great leader, and he's great for the locker room. And you're seeing that in Tampa right now. It just, unfortunately, it had to happen someplace else. But, Joe can lead now. Joe knows what to do. I saw him kibitzing with all the young players. I mean, it's probably a little bit odd. He's got five kids, and I'm sure, when he talks to some of his kids, he might think, the maturity level is the same as some of the guys on the team. I'm saying that tongue-in-cheek. I'm not saying that, they're children out there. But, he's talking to young, Mason Graham is 21 years old. I don't think there's a disconnect. It's still football. But at the same time, you're asking a 40-year-old guy to lead. I know he knows how to do it, but still, if you're going to go, you're probably not watching the same things on TikTok with each other.
Baldy, I started watching the Dallas Cowboys documentary on Netflix yesterday, and you started your career in Dallas, and you were kind of there before. Then it goes to chronicle everything that happened around 1987. It was a pretty interesting year in Dallas. Do you have any thoughts? Are you eager to watch that, or are you like, I'm good, I saw it all, I know about how this happened?
I haven't gone looking for it. I barely know. I mean, you just reminded me that it's on. I'm sure I'm gonna hear about it. I'm always interested in the Cowboys and the history and the folklore and everything. 87 was a strike year. It was an ugly year in Dallas. I was there during that time. Thankfully, Jimmy Johnson came in with Jerry and turned things around, for a brief period of time. It was a miraculous turnaround from 89 to 94. I mean, absolutely miraculous what they did. I don't know that anybody's ever turned a franchise around that quickly. But, it's been a lot of drama since then. But, they've proven, Dallas proved that if you have a Hall of Fame quarterback, you have a chance to win Super Bowls. And if you don't, it's hard to win Super Bowls. And that's if you don't have a perfect team around the quarterback. And I think that's one of the messages that will probably get sent, because I'm sure they're going to talk to Roger and they're going to talk to Troy, as they should. I mean, they know what it takes to win in Dallas, which isn't easy. I mean, there's a lot of distractions in that town and a lot of expectations, and football is king. And so, you got to put a good product on the field for the fans to show up in that building.
Brian, you've been very gracious with your time. All the best. Hope to talk to you again soon.
My pleasure, guys. You bet.
Brian Baldinger, Odyssey NFL Insider. He's the host of the Best Football Show podcast. Make sure to check it out. The Best Football Show. It's on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We had Myles Garrett's I'm not talking about that. With the speeding stuff, we had Joe Flacco being named the starting quarterback this week. We were just talking about known Zaddy Christopher Maloney yesterday at Browns practice. To tackle all of these things, she joins us every single Wednesday. Usually it's at 3:20 today because of Kevin Stefanski's presser. She's joining us on the fan hotline in this segment. Ashley Bastock at Cleveland.com. Ashley, welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. I am still starstruck by meeting Christopher Maloney yesterday, in case you were wondering. I heard it was something you might be wondering.
My partner had no frame of reference for Christopher Maloney or SVU.
Ashley, I've watched so much TV in my life. I've never seen Law & Order.
Oh, my gosh. I can't believe Law & Order SVU going over your head is kind of wild.
You know what the world I'm living in right now? I saw so many people like yourself taking photos and having the greatest time and talking about this celebrity and having discussions about him being there as if it was like Tom Cruise. And I'm like, what am I missing here?
Well, it was like Tom Cruise to me, because let me tell you, me and my best friend / teammate in college, Missy, like, this was our routine every Tuesday. USA Network would have Law & Order SVU Marathon, so in between our classes ending and us going to basketball, we would sit on the couch and watch Christopher Maloney and Mariska Hargitay marathons through Law & Order SVU. So honestly, couldn't believe, like, the first time he walked past us, didn't realize it was him, because, like, why would I expect to ever see Christopher Maloney at a Browns practice? But yeah, he was so nice, stopped and took a picture with us, talked to us for a few minutes. So really, really fun to see him out here yesterday.
So we will get back to the fun in a minute, because I do have a couple more questions on this, but we can't do the whole segment on it. I'm curious your take on Myles Garrett's I'm not here to talk about my speeding ticket. I'm not here to talk about my personal life, unless you want to talk about the charity event I just did. How did you feel about that answer today?
You know, I was not crazy about it, quite honestly. I think this hasn't really been handled super well, in the sense that it's a one-day story that's now become a multiple-day story, and I think it would have been wrapped up already if we had gotten a chance to hear from him in Philadelphia. Now, why we didn't, I don't know. But that, to me, I don't think it was handled well in that regard. And then I never think it's the best strategy when you say, I'm not talking about something, and now that becomes the headline. So quite honestly, I don't know that I care for it. I think it was very, very different than the way Shador Sanders handled questions about his speeding ticket. I really think that's the way to go in any instance like this, is you show contrition, you move on, you don't let it continue to be a talking point. And I do think, unfortunately, even though this isn't what Myles Garrett or the team wanted, it was a bigger talking point today, I think, by him getting up there and insisting vehemently that he wasn't going to talk about it. It kind of, to me, made it a bigger story today than I think it would have been if he had said, yeah, I screwed up again. You know, Kevin and I talked, we talked to the team, and we're moving on. I think that would have actually been a better way to handle the whole situation.
Yeah, I mean, no question. And honestly, it's funny, because we talked about it, and then leading into the Stefanski press conference, we were like, he's going to get asked about this. There was a lot of news today, though. Is that why it kind of got swept under the rug there?
I do think so. And I mean, we have already asked Kevin about it. We did ask Kevin about it last week in Philadelphia. But I do think there were so many injury things we had to ask about today. Quite a bit happened, which, if people listen to the presser, I mean, Sed Tillman unexpectedly out of practice today. We find out it's a thumb injury. We had to get our update on Denzel Ward. Shador Sanders was doing more today, and Kenny Pickett wasn't doing team drills today. So there was a lot to ask about, and I think from that perspective, since we already heard from Kevin on it, I don't think it was super necessary to kind of grill him about it again. But he got the brunt of it last week in Philadelphia, and that's why I would have thought it would have been beneficial to hear from Myles then and just kind of wrap this story up. But here it is, and it's more than a week later, and it's something people are still talking about, and I think this 100% could have been avoided.
Ashley Bastock on the fan hotline here with Nick and JP, breaking down the latest with the Browns. So were you surprised? I guess it's a two-parter on Kenny Pickett. Were you surprised to hear Kenny Pickett won't play in the preseason finale this Saturday? And what do you think the most likely outcome is with Kenny once we get down to the cutdown time?
Yeah, I don't think I was surprised to hear that he won't play, just because of the whole time on task thing and soft tissue injuries being so unpredictable, I think it would be asking a lot to send him out for consistent snaps. You know, in terms of cut down day, I still very much think like the possibility of them keeping four quarterbacks is still out there. I know that's the thing everyone's talking about and asking about. And look, they liked Kenny Pickett enough to go out and actively trade for him. That was the first move they made in this quarterback room. And he hasn't had enough time on task to really compete with Joe for that starting job. But I even wrote in my story that went up this morning talking about what's next for Dillon Gabriel and Shedeur Sanders that like Kenny Pickett is the only vet left when you're talking about a true number two backup quarterback in that room. Kevin, wouldn't reveal their plans there for that. And obviously, if you're going to be the backup, you have to be healthy. So I think that remains to be seen. But right now, I'm still of the mind frame like I expect all four of these guys to be here.
I know I'm asking to kind of like get inside Joe Flacco's head, so it's tough. But do you think Joe Flacco?
Because he's so tall, you really
got to get up there. Does Joe Flacco think this is his final season?
You know, I think like I would think if you're Joe, you kind of have to always have that in the back of your mind at this stage of your career. But I really don't get the impression that Joe Flacco is somebody who gets caught up in those big picture, 50,000 feet view type of scenarios regarding his own career. I think you don't play this long in the NFL if you do those sorts of things. And but I think I said yesterday, you know, I think probably ever since 23 when he was shocked no one had called him and he was sitting on his couch into November before the Browns called him, you would think that every year since then you got to realize like, okay, you're not going to get shown off the way Tom Brady did, right? Like that's just not in the cards at this stage. So I think like he appreciates the opportunity in the moments that he's given, but I don't know that outwardly we'll ever hear much from of that sort of overarching kind of view of his career. Cause I really just think he's worried about what most pros are worried about, the day to day and what's coming up next week and that sort of thing.
Ashley, we've had a few discussions on this, but you know, there's been a little push of Browns optimism with the Joe Flacco news, and it's apparent the Browns aren't purposefully trying to go 5-12. And it's apparent that the Browns are trying to present this united front. We're trying to win this year. That's our goal. So if the intention isn't to go 5-12 and you go 5-12, shouldn't that mean something different than if the intention is to go 5-12 and you do in fact go 5-12?
I feel like you lost me somewhere.
There's a lot of 5-12 in there.
I'm so sorry. You said 5-12 so many times. I've gotten. So are we saying is there a difference between like a team actively like trying to tank versus a team who's not and ends up like with the losing record?
Yeah, I mean,
is
I think
kind of the gist of it.
I think the Browns are going to try and win every game they can this year until that
is it an issue if they go 5-12 then basically. Yes and no. Like I think we have to be realistic, right? Because at the end of the day, this is a team that we don't know for sure what their long-term answer is at quarterback. And I think in the NFL, when you don't have a surefire long-term answer at quarterback, it's very difficult to win. So I think we've heard the Haslams talk about that, right? I know Jimmy Haslam has been big on that, about being realistic. So I think, it'd be great to win more than five games or the 5.5 games I think that Vegas has them at for the year. I think it's not the end of the world if you lose that many games, just given where your team is at and that realisticness the need to be realistic about where you are. And I think like what's going to be most important for them coming out of this season, if they do have that 5-12 record, is to figure out what you have in that quarterback room, have a very clear picture and a very clear vision about what you want to do in the offseason and how you want to use those two number first round picks that you have. So that to me is kind of like, okay, if you have the losing record, what does success look like? That is how I would define success for them at this point. But I think you got to be realistic. I mean, Joe Flacco has looked really good and Cleveland loves him, but he's 40 years old and you have two rookies
easy.
That you have to figure out what you have in them. 40 years old in football terms. I mean, I'm 32 and I still laugh when we're calling 30-year-old old.
Are we
doing?
In Zaddy territory?
Me? Oh,
yeah, Nick 39. Turns 40 in a month.
I'm not commenting on that.
Yeah, please don't.
Not with you guys. So I think that's just, for me, it's about being realistic, right? Like, we're not saying they're actively tanking. We've seen what it looks like when this team actively tanks. But I think there's a difference also, you know, there's a difference between trying to lose and losing and what's worse. But there's also a trying to lose versus being realistic about how your team is set up right now.
All right, Ashley, I want your thoughts on the wide receiver room. And you can answer if you think it's going to be five or six players in there. But I think if we start with Judy Tillman, Jamari Thrash, and Isaiah Bond as the four locks, I would imagine DeAndre Carter's in there as well because he's returning kicks. So that's at five right there. Out of David Bell, Larvadan, Caden Davis, Deontay Johnson, do you go for a sixth or do you just cut it off at five right there?
You know, I think we're going to see them with six guys. I do think it's important to note this isn't going to be like the offense like last year where we saw them running four wides at times. Like, that's not going to happen. You know, David Bell, tough. He's been hurt. The Deontay Johnson, I thought, had a decent practice today. He had a rough week last week, so I've kind of been fascinated by that aspect of it because I think the flip side, Caden Davis and Gage Larvadan have looked really good throughout camp and have both made cases for themselves. And I think Gage Larvadan especially has made it very hard on them. However, you know, the flip side of that is I think both of those guys are going to be around in some capacity by the time the 53-man roster is set, because that's typically what happens when you have these younger undrafted pass catchers that a team is excited by. You're the one who's been on the front lines with that guy. So it's kind of rare that they would then get scooped up by another team in this situation. So I would expect maybe one of those guys right now, if I had to pick between them and Deontay Johnson, I would actually maybe go Gage right now and say Gage on the 53. That's who I would put on the 53. And then Caden on the practice squad. I think you can flip it. But, yeah, I'll be curious about Deontay Johnson because I thought he started camp really strong. I talked about that with you guys. Last week, last week and a half has been kind of tough for him. He was involved in that errant route running play, had some key drops in the joint practices against the Eagles. So not a great finish to camp for him.
All right, one before we go, Ashley. Christopher Maloney, Drew Carey, Brad Paisley, The Miz. Who is Cleveland's most famous celebrity sports fan?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know. That's so hard. Like, do I say Christopher Maloney just because he's the one I met yesterday? I feel like I have to say my new best friend, Christopher Maloney, so he doesn't get mad at me.
I think it's between him and The Miz. I think Drew Carey used to be famous.
Drew Carey's way more famous than Maloney.
He used to be. I mean, now he's just a guy in Price is Right now. What else does he do beyond that?
It's a massive show every single day. Does Condoleezza Rice get any?
18-year-olds and 93-year-olds.
Does Condoleezza Rice get any play in this, or is she just like a
faux Brown?
I mean, like, she's mega famous. She almost ran the Browns at one point.
And what do you think of her politics there, Ashley?
You guys are killing me. You know, I used to be a political reporter. Come on.
You got an answer. No, I'm kidding.
You have a lot of thoughts then. Okay.
Political reporter. Yeah, I don't talk about politics anymore. That's in my past life.
I'm going to say it was Maloney. I'm going to say we settled on Maloney here, and JP
like
just is outside
Maloney. And of those guys, of those fans we listed, the famous fans, I've only met one of them. So I can only go based on what do I know? I know my experience. So I'm going to say Christopher Maloney.
Well, Brad Paisley stopped being a Browns fan like 4 years ago for some reason. He was really into the Baker years. He got on, and then he did Hard Knocks, and I really thought it was going to be a thing, and then we just haven't heard from him since.
Was there something with Deshaun that would make somebody not be a fan of this team anymore?
Oh, jeez.
Ashley.
That's Ashley.
I'm so sorry.
I'm sorry for him.
You got it
okay?
Like three times
I apologize
there.
For him.
We'll be better next week, okay?
All right. You guys have a week to get on your best behavior.
All right, thank you so much. No, it's just like, was there like a big story with Deshaun?
I don't think that was the reason
where
why.
Brad Paisley might
I'd bet more
object.
Money that it was like Baker leaving might have made him more mad than Deshaun coming here. But I'm not in Brad Paisley's head. I don't know.
Like Baker, you know, was kind of incendiary. Was there something that I missed with Deshaun Watson? It tracks for why
we haven't seen Brad Paisley. That does track.
Anything to do with Deshaun that really caused a stir. I'm just trying to scratch my head there. Great stuff with Ashley. We'll react to what she had to say. And I don't think Kenny Pickett can beat these accusations. That's in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Heart Starts Pounding, Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is a weekly podcast hosted by me, Kaylin Moore. Each week, I'll take you on a dark journey through terrifying true urban legends, bizarre true crime cases, chilling tales of backwoods horror, and more. So if you're looking to join a passionate community of the darkly curious, check out Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, stay curious.